to why buy when format recognizes where you are today, where you want to go, and the deadline for reaching that goal. As deceptively simple as this formula may seem, many leaders often struggle to translate their strategic concepts into a single from X to Y by when finish line. But once they've done it, both they and the team they lead have gained tremendous clarity. Typically, however, goals lack this kind of clarity. We constantly see goals that no one can achieve because there's no finish line, no way of telling whether you completed the goal or not, and where you stand at any given point. For instance, from a major global retailer, improve inventory processing. From a British publisher, develop and strengthen new and existing client relationships. From an Australian tourist authority, influence effective tourism workforce development in Queensland. From a European investment firm, successfully convert our portfolio to a life cycle strategy. From a multinational agribusiness company, identify, recruit, and retain the best employees. These goals lack the measurement that can tell the team when they've won the game. Improve inventory processing. How much? Strengthen new client relationships. How do we measure stronger? Successfully convert a portfolio to a life cycle strategy. How will we know when we've done that? Effective lag measures for a WIG sound like this. Improve inventory processing by increasing per year inventory turns from 8 to 10 by December 31st. Raise our client relationship scores from 40 to 70 on the loyalty scale within 2 years. Move 40% of our customers from fixed categories to life cycle categories of investments within 5 years. Launch the new CRM solution to an 85% quality beta rating by the end of the fiscal year. If a goal is wildly important, surely you should be able to tell if you've achieved it or not. The formula from X to Y by when makes that possible. In setting this finish line, we often hear the question, over what time period should the achievement of a WIG be spread? Our answer? It depends. Since teams and organizations often think and measure themselves in terms of a calendar or a fiscal year, a one-year time frame makes a good starting point for a WIG. That said, remember that a WIG is not a strategy. A WIG is a tactical goal with a limited time frame. We've seen some WIGs that take 2 years and some that take 6 months. The length of a project WIG, such as complete the new website within budget by July 1, will usually correspond with the time frame of the project itself. Use your own judgment. Just remember that a WIG should be within the time frame that balances the need to create a compelling vision with the need to create an achievable goal. Shooting for the moon. In 1958, the fledgling National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, had many very important goals like this one. Quote, the expansion of human knowledge of phenomena in the atmosphere and space. It sounded like many of the goals you might hear in business today. Become world class or lead the industry. Although the leaders at NASA had ways to measure various aspects of this goal, they lacked the clarity of a defined finish line. They also lacked the results that the Soviet Union was producing. But in 1961, President John F. Kennedy shook NASA to its foundation when he made the pronouncement, quote, land a man on the moon and return him safely to the Earth before this decade is out. Suddenly, NASA had a formidable challenge, the war it would fight for the next 10 years. And it was stated in exactly the way a WIG should be stated. X is earthbound, Y is to the moon and back, and when is by December 31st, 1969. Prior to Kennedy's declaration, what kind of results was NASA achieving with very vague definitions of objectives? Russia went into space first with satellites and cosmonauts while the United States was still blowing up rockets on launch pads. Contrast NASA's earlier vague goal with the 1961 goal, one clear measurable WIG. Now with its reputation at stake on the world stage, NASA had to determine the few key battles that would win the war. In the end, three critical battles were chosen, navigation, propulsion, and life support. Navigation posed the formidable challenge of moving a spacecraft through space at 18 miles per second to a precise location on the moon, which was also moving rapidly in its elliptical orbit around the Earth. Propulsion was no less challenging, because a rocket heavy enough to carry a lunar module had never yet achieved a velocity sufficient to break Earth's gravitational pull. Life support was the most critical of all, because it required developing a capsule and landing module that would keep astronauts alive, both for the journey to and from the moon, while they explored the moon's surface. President Kennedy's speech also included another key aspect of Discipline 1, saying no to good ideas. When he acknowledged that there were many other worthy objectives that the country would not pursue in order to achieve this goal. But as he asked, why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? That goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one which we intended to win. In this way, he narrowed the focus of NASA to a finish line whose achievement became one of the most important ventures in human history. What do you think happened to accountability within NASA when the challenge of putting a man on the moon was publicly announced? It went through the roof. This is particularly clear when you remember that the spacecraft they use had only a tiny fraction of the computing power of the smartphone in your pocket. Even worse, the engineers and scientists still had no operational technology for winning the three necessary battles. Looking back, you might say human beings had no business being on the moon in 1969. Now consider a different question. When accountability soared, what happened to morale and engagement? Well, it too went through the roof. Most leaders find this surprising. We tend to think that when accountability is at its highest, the pressure makes morale go down. The reality is the opposite. Narrowing your focus increases both accountability and the engagement of your team. When a team moves from having a dozen "we really hope" goals to one or two "no matter what" goals, the effect on morale is dramatic. It's as though a switch exists in every team member's head called "game on." If you can throw that switch, you've laid the foundation for extraordinary execution. When President Kennedy said to the moon and back by the end of the decade, he threw that switch. Can you remember what it's like to be part of a team when the game on switch is activated? It's a remarkable experience. Even though you still have to deal with the whirlwind and its myriad of demands, you also have a finish line, something clear and important at which you can win. Even more meaningful, it's something whereby every member of the team can see their contribution makes a difference. Everyone wants to feel that they are winning and that they are contributing to something meaningful. And when times are tough, they want it even more. When we started on this journey years ago, we did not intend to focus on defining or even refining strategy. However, we quickly learned that the line separating strategy and execution is blurry. Applying this first discipline will sharpen your strategy more than you think it will, but what it will really do is make your strategy executable. Think of it this way. Above your head is a thought bubble, and inside that bubble are all the aspects of your strategy, including opportunities you wish you were pursuing, new ideas and concepts, problems you know you need to fix, and a lot of what's and how's to get it all done. Your bubble is complicated and chaotic. It's also completely different from the bubbles above every other leader's head. This is why Discipline 1 requires you to translate your strategy from concepts to targets, from vague strategic intent to specific finish lines. The four rules for implementing Discipline 1 give an entire organization a framework for doing this successfully. More examples will be provided in Section 2 and 3. Finally, remember that the four rules of focusing are unforgiving. At some point, you'll want to cheat on them, even just a little. We know we often want to do the same inside our organization. However, what we've learned is that the rules governing focus are like the rules governing gravity. They aren't concerned with what you think or the details of your particular situation. They simply yield predictable consequences. When you think about it, the principle of focusing on the vital few goals is common sense. It's just not common practice. As one of Aesop's fables, a young boy puts his hand into a pot full of hazelnuts. He grabs as many as he could possibly hold, but when he tried to pull out his hand, he found the neck of the pot was too narrow. Unwilling to lose his catch, and yet unable to withdraw his hand, he burst into tears and bitterly lamented his disappointment. Like the boy, you might find it hard to let go of a lot of good goals until you start serving a greater goal. As Steve Jobs often said, I'm as proud of what we don't do as I am what we do. Discipline one is about defining the greater goal, and it is a discipline. Discipline two, act on the lead measures. The second discipline is to apply disproportionate energy to the activities that drive your lead measures. This provides the leverage for achieving the lag measures. Discipline two is the discipline of leverage. Lead measures are the measures of the activities most connected to achieving the goal. Discipline one takes the wildly important goal for an organization, breaks it down into a set of specific measurable targets until every team has a wildly important goal of its own. Discipline two then defines the leveraged actions that will enable the team to achieve that goal. While a lag measure tells you if you're achieving the goal, the lead measure tells you if you are likely to achieve the goal. While a lag measure is hard to do anything about, a lead measure is virtually within your control. For example, while you can't control how often your car breaks down on the road, a lag measure, you can certainly control how often your car receives routine maintenance, a lead measure. And the more you act on the lead measure, the more likely you are to avoid the roadside breakdown. Once you've defined your wildly important goal, it would seem natural, even intuitive, to then create a detailed plan listing all of the specific tasks and subtasks required for achieving the goal in the coming months. But with discipline two, that's not what you are going to do. Long-term plans created by most organizations are often too rigid. They lack the ability to adapt to the constantly changing needs and the environment of the business. Not surprisingly, they also end up on your shelf collecting dust after only a few months. With discipline two, you do something quite different from that. Discipline two requires you to define the daily or weekly measures, the achievements of which will lead to the goal. Then each day or week, your team identifies the most important actions that will drive those lead measures. In this way, your team is creating a just-in-time plan that enables them to quickly adapt while remaining focused on the WIG. Lag versus lead measures. Let's drill down into the distinction between lag and lead measures. A lag measure is the measurement of a result you are trying to achieve. We call them lag measures because by the time you get the data, the result has already happened. They're always lagging. The formula from X to Y by when in a WIG gives us a lag measure. But WIGs are not the only lag measures in your world. The whirlwind is full of lag measures such as revenue, accounts payable, inventory number, hospitalization rates, asset utilization, and so forth. Lead measures are different. They foretell the results. They have two primary characteristics. First, a lead measure is predictive, meaning that if the lead measure changes, you can predict that the lag measure will also change. Second, a lead measure is influenceable. It can be directly influenced by the team. That is, the team can make a lead measure happen without a significant dependency on other teams. In discipline two, you create lead measures, the movement of which will become the driving force for achieving the WIG. In the months ahead, your team will invest consistent energy towards moving these lead measures, and we have seen with hundreds of teams, this investment will likely be the key to their success. We strongly believe that understanding lead measures will be one of the most important insights you take from this book. Let's explore the two characteristics of a lead measure further by first assuming you have a WIG. To increase corn production from 200 tons to 300 tons by September 1st. The X to Y of corn tonnage is your lag measure. You know that rainfall is an important factor in corn production, so rainfall can be predictive of the corn harvest. But is it a good lead measure? No, because you can't influence the weather to produce the right amount of rain. Rainfall is predictive, but it isn't influenceable. Rainfall fails the test because both characteristics are equally important. Other measures, such as soil quality or fertilization rates, however, easily meet the test. Now, take another illustration with which many people are intimately familiar. A wig of achieving weight loss. Obviously, the lag measure will be your weight, as reflected by the bathroom scale. If you format this wig correctly, you might define it as decreased total body weight from 190 pounds to 175 pounds by May 30th, right? From X to Y by when. This is a good start. But what are the lead measures that will be predictive of this achievable goal and equally important that you can influence? You would likely choose both diet and exercise, and of course you'd be right. These two measures fulfill the first characteristic of being predictive. Reducing calories consumed and increasing calories burned strongly indicates that you'll lose weight. Just as important, however, these two lead measures are also directly influenceable by you. Achieve these two lead measures at the level specified outside your daily whirlwind, and you will see your lag measures moving when you step on the bathroom scale. There is a problem with lead measures. Where do leaders normally fixate? On lead measures or lag measures? That's right. As a leader, you've likely spent your entire career focusing on lag measures, even though you can't directly affect them and you're not alone. Think about the last meeting with the other leaders in your organization. What were you discussing, analyzing, planning, and agonizing about? Lag measures, and usually your inability to move them. For example, it's easy for school teachers to measure the reading levels of students with standardized tests. Often they obsess over these lag measures. However, it's harder to come up with the lead measures that predict how students will do on these tests. The school might hire tutors or reserve more time for uninterrupted reading. In any case, the school is likely to do better if it tracks data on time spent reading or in tutoring lead measures rather than hope and pray that the reading scores, the lag measures, will rise on their own accord. We see this syndrome every day all over the world in every area of life. The sales leader fixating on total sales, the service leader fixating on customer satisfaction, parents fixating on their children's grades, and the dieters fixating on the scale. And in virtually every case, fixating solely on the lag measures fails to drive results. There are two main reasons almost all leaders do this. First, lag measures are measures of success. They are the results you have to achieve. Second, data on lag measures is almost always much easier to obtain and much more visible than data on lead measures. It's easy to step on the scale and know exactly how much you weigh. But how easy is it to find out how many calories you've eaten today or how many you've burned? That data is often hard to get, and it can take real discipline to keep getting it. Here's a warning. Right about now, you might be tempted to oversimplify what we're saying. If you're thinking something like, so all you're saying that is if you want to lose weight, you should diet and exercise, what's revolutionary about that? Then you've missed the point of discipline too. There's a huge difference between merely understanding the importance of diet and exercise and measuring how many calories you've eaten and how many calories you've burned. Everyone knows you should diet and exercise, but the people who actually measure how many calories they've eaten and how many they've burned each day are the ones actually losing weight. In the end, it's the data on lead measures that makes the difference. That enables you to close the gap between what you know your team should do and what they're actually doing. Without lead measures, you are left to try and manage the lag measure, an approach that seldom produces significant results. W. Edwards Deming, the management and quality guru, said it best when he told executives that managing a company by looking at financial data, or lag measures, is the equivalent of driving a car by looking out the rearview mirror. Lead measures also eliminate the element of surprise that a sole focus on lag measures can bring. Imagine this scenario. You and your team have been working hard on a goal to improve customer satisfaction. It's your most important measure and the one on which your bonus is based. And the new customer satisfaction scores have just arrived in your inbox. As one of our clients expressed it, you are about to have one of two reactions. Oh, cool, or oh, crap. But either way, there is nothing you can do to change the results. They're in the past. The same client also pointed out, if luck is playing a significant role in your career, then you're fixating on lag measures. We couldn't agree more. Now imagine instead that you're tracking the two most predictive lead measures of customer satisfaction. And for the past 3 weeks, your team has performed well above standards on those measures. Do you think your experience will change when the new customer satisfaction scores arrive? Absolutely. It will be like stepping on the scale knowing that you have met your diet and exercise measures every day. You already know that the lag measure will change. Defining lead measures. Increase annual water production from 175 million liters to 185 million liters by December 31st. That was the WIG of the water bottling plant of a large beverage company when we began working with a senior executive in charge of supply chain to implement 4DX. The plant had been struggling to meet its targeted water production levels for several years, and the leaders were anxious to identify the lead measures that would drive water production to new levels. We began by asking them to discuss what they thought a good lead measure for increasing annual water production would be. Monthly water production, they quickly responded. Sorry, we said, that won't work. They seemed confused. Why not? Asked the plant manager. If we hit our monthly water production targets, then we'll hit our annual production, right? You're absolutely right that monthly water production is predictive of annual water production, we replied, but monthly production isn't any more influenceable by your team than annual production. All you're doing is identifying a different lag measure that you can get more frequently than annual production. It is still a lag. This dialogue is very common when teams first determine lead measures. And unfortunately, the leaders at the water plant still weren't quite getting it. To help, we asked them what their lead measure would be for monthly water production. Daily water production, they responded. We knew that we weren't getting through. The discussion grew more animated until the production manager finally demanded everyone's attention. I've got it. I know what our lead measure should be. He walked to the front of the room and began to explain. We're constantly running shifts without full crews, and we have way too much machine downtime. Those are the two main things that keep us from producing more water. Now we were getting somewhere. Everyone in the room agreed with this diagnosis. They still didn't have usable lead measures, however. They needed to translate full crews and preventative maintenance into actual measures. But they had captured the idea. Quickly, they identified their first lead measure, increased percentage of shifts with full crews from 80% to 95%. The second lead measure was even easier, increased percentage of compliance to preventative maintenance schedules from 72% to 100%. The strategic bet was that if the plant ensured full crews and a reduction in machine downtime, it would achieve a significant increase in water production. Over the next few months, the teams put a disproportionate amount of effort into those two lead measures above their day-to-day whirlwind. Not only did their water production increase, it grew at a rate far greater than expected. This is a good illustration of the process for defining lead measures, but it also helps to make an important point. Our consultant on the project lauded the plant's results, but then asked an important question. Why weren't they already doing those two things? His point was that their lead measures didn't come from Franklin Covey. The leaders at the plant already knew the importance of running shifts with full crews and compliance to preventative maintenance standards. But despite knowing it, they weren't doing it. Why? As with most teams, the problem was not that they didn't know. It was a matter of focus. They didn't do. There were dozens of things that needed improvement and focus, not just crew staffing and preventative maintenance. And by trying to improve everything, they remained trapped in the whirlwind. They spent every day spreading their energy across so many urgent priorities and trying to move all the dials at once that in the end, nothing moved. As in the illustration we offered earlier, it was like trying to make holes in a piece of paper by applying even pressure on all your fingers. Obviously, this problem is not unique to the leaders in this plant. If we followed you around for a few days, we would likely observe two predominant activities. One, you would spend most of your time battling your whirlwind, and two, a lot of your remaining time would be spent worrying over your lag measures. The problem with these two activities is they consume enormous energy and produce little, if any, leverage beyond sustaining the whirlwind. And it's leverage that you need most. The key principle behind lead measures is simply this: leverage. Think of it this way. Achieving your wildly important goal is like trying to move a giant rock. But despite all the energy your team exerts, it doesn't move. It's not a question of effort. If it were, you and your team would have already moved it. The problem is that effort alone isn't enough. The lead measures act like a lever, making it possible to move the rock. Now, consider the two primary characteristics of a lever. First, unlike the rock, the lever is something we can move. It's influenceable. And second, when the lever moves, the rock moves. It's predictive. How do we choose the right levers? To achieve a goal you've never achieved before, you must do things you've never done before. Look around you. Who else has achieved this goal or something like it? What did they do differently? Analyze carefully any barriers you foresee and decide together how to overcome them. Use your imagination. What haven't you thought of that might make all the difference? Then select the activities you believe will have the greatest impact on achieving the WIG. The 80-20 activities. What 20% of what you do has as much or more leverage on the WIG than 80% of what you do? In the words of consultant and entrepreneur Richard Koch, in business, quote, the massive activities will always be pointless, poorly conceived, badly directed, wastefully executed, and largely beside the point. A small portion of activity will always be terrifically effective. It is probably not what you think it is. It is opaque and buried within a basket of less effective activity. Close quote. Finding the right lever among many possibilities is perhaps the toughest and most intriguing challenge for leaders trying to execute a WIG. A distinguished high-end department store at the prestigious Phipps Plaza Mall near Atlanta was under heavy pressure from new competitors. Discounters as well as two major national chain stores that had recently moved into the area. Revenues were down 8% from the previous year. What to do to stop the bleeding? Adopting 4DX, the store managers announced only one WIG for the year, which was to match revenue numbers from the year before through increasing average transaction rate, the amount purchased in any given transaction. All 11 departments came up with supporting WIGs, but they hadn't yet found lead measures with sufficient leverage to drive the achievement of their overall WIG. It just wasn't happening. The pressure to achieve the year-over-year lag measure was so strong, managers were screaming at everyone, sell more, sell more. All of their energy was poured into raising transaction averages, a lag measure, with no specific idea of what to do differently. We worked late one night with the manager of the shoe department, which seemed to be doing better than the other departments. We drilled down looking for the right levers. Tell us about your people. How do they sell? Then he told us about his best salesperson, a woman who sold 3 times more shoes than the average. We asked, what does she do differently? The managers knew immediately what she did differently. She would get lost in the customer's world, notice what they were wearing, ask about their families, understand their needs. Then she would bring out 6 pairs of shoes instead of 1 pair to show the customer. She would say, oh, it's spring. How about this open-toed pair? Or, I noticed your Gucci bag would go really well with these sandals. You like those red shoes? How about these? Also, instead of asking customers if they wanted to set up a charge account and getting a refusal, she would simply ring up the sale and say, you're getting 10% off with that purchase by setting up a charge account today. All you need to do is sign here. The light went on for us. How many of your people are doing these things? How many pairs of shoes do your people show a day? I have no idea. How would our systems monitor that? Well, your systems can't, but that doesn't mean it can't be measured. So they set up an experimental standard in the shoe department. Each associate would do 3 things. Show at least 4 pairs of shoes to every customer, write thank you notes, and invite every customer to set up a charge account. So how can I tell if you're doing these things? The manager asked. Well, you won't. Your people will track themselves. Behind the cashier's desk, they set up a simple spreadsheet with 3 columns. Each time a salesperson did these 3 things with a customer, he or she would check off a column. How do I know it's accurate? The manager asked. What if they lie? We bet he could trust them. Besides, a fraud would surface eventually. Transaction averages were tracked for every employee. When the lead measure started moving the lag measure, they would be able to see the correlation. The results? The sales team became maniacally focused on the 3 lead measures, and these levers worked. It was exciting when the lag measure started moving up. It turned out that there was a direct correlation between the lead and the achievement of the lag. They installed these measures across all departments in the store, and by the end of the year, they'd not only achieved their WIG of matching the previous year's revenues, they surpassed it by 2%. That was a 10-point improvement in 3 months. For the store manager, the doorway of understanding was opened. None of the lead measures were new to them. Suggestive selling is just retail 101, but they didn't know if their team members were actually doing it. We knew they could measure that behavior. We've learned that the lead measures are usually already there in the business, but no one's tracking them. Management was swimming in data, but not focusing on the data that would really make a difference. The key is to isolate and consistently track the right levers. Finally, instead of hounding the staff to do better, managers could manage to the data. They could see if Jane was showing 100 or 300 pairs of shoes a day. They could track the number of charge accounts each salesperson set up. They became teachers, watching people, demonstrating how to do suggestive selling and sharing best practices. Their energy went up and their results followed. They will never manage the same way again. Of course, at times it may take some intense effort to identify the lead measures with the most leverage. An intriguing example comes from the amazing turnaround of the Oakland Athletics. In the 1990s, one of the poorest teams in Major League Baseball. The team played in a dilapidated stadium, attendance was low, and signing great players seemed more and more out of reach. No way could they bid successfully for players against wealthy teams like the New York Yankees, who could dip into budgets 5 times that of Oakland. Caught between financial pressure from the owners and the fans' outcry for better, more expensive baseball players, General Manager Sandy Alderson's WIG was to save the team, and to achieve that, he had to fill the stadium. But how? He knew that people came to watch baseball for many reasons. Some went to see star players, some enjoy the atmosphere of the ballpark, and some just want a night out. But people always come to see a winning team. It's winning that matters most. So he began to ask himself what really produces wins in baseball. No one had asked this question seriously before. Most people assumed that great players were essential to a winning team. If you had stars, you'd win. But Alderson thought, suppose there was more to it. He and his assistant manager, Billy Bean, brought together the best thinkers they could find on the subject. What produced wins? The answer, of course, is the highest number of runs. But what exactly contributes to runs? What are the lead measures that create a run? That's how statisticians and computer scientists got into the picture. Their hard research began to serve up factors that had always been there, but that no one had ever noticed before. They discovered that the mighty sluggers who hit home runs were often not all that productive. The most productive players were the ones who could just get on base. If they could get one base and then another, they could score runs much more reliably than the power hitters everyone valued so much, and who commanded astronomical salaries. As in the old fable, the tortoise turned out to provide much more leverage than the hares. After Alderson left, Billy Bean became the new manager. He did the unthinkable, going on a binge of recruiting nobodies. The players he'd hired were some of the most awkward or undervalued prospects, and he paid relatively little for them. Oakland became a laughingstock. What was Bean thinking? Then, sort of magic developed on the field. Unaccountably, Oakland started winning games again. The poorest team in the league, at least financially, won the division title. The next year, they did it again. Soon, they were locked in a battle with the mighty, wealthy Yankees for the pennant. Although they didn't quite make it, Oakland astonished everyone in baseball by regularly beating teams much more gifted in terms of money and talent. Stirred by victory, the fans returned, and little Oakland, with its dingy stadium, consistently finished near the top of the standings year after year. For a decade, the Oakland A's maintained the fifth best record in Major League Baseball while ranking 24th of the 30 Major League teams in player salary. Instead of falling to the bottom where they belonged, they rarely stood lower than first or second in their division. What Billy Beane did was track the on-base record of players across the league and then recruit from those who were very good at getting on base. These players were usually not flashy, not the big-name athletes, and didn't pull down the big money. But they were dependable workhorses who could be relied on to get on base. Getting on base was the best predictor of producing runs, and in baseball, runs are the name of the game. The Oakland management team reframed the game by acting on the league measures that produce wins. Through hard research, sifting through endless statistics to get at the key factors that produced runs, they discovered high-leverage lead measures no one else had noticed before. The exciting turnaround story was eventually chronicled in a popular film, Moneyball. In Section 2, we'll give you more guidance on how to arrive at effective lead measures drawn from the lessons our clients have learned. Over the years, we've seen thousands of leaders learn that an important key to executing is putting disproportionate energy against the leverage points by focusing on moving lead measures. If you have a big rock to move, you're going to need a lever that is highly predictive and controllable. The bigger the rock, the more leverage you'll need. Tracking lead measures. Younger Brothers Construction is a residential construction company in Arizona that had a big problem: a rising rate of accidents and injuries. Not only did each incident mean that a member of their crew was hurt, it also meant a delay in the completion of a tightly scheduled construction project, increased insurance rates, and potentially the loss of their safety rating. Reducing safety incidents had become the company's most important focus, so it wasn't difficult for them to arrive at their wildly important goal: to reduce safety incidents from 7% to 1% by December 31st. Once the WIG was established, they had to determine the lead measures that were both predictive of fewer accidents and influenceable by the team. The first idea they considered was to conduct more intensive safety training. It was highly influenceable, as they could simply make everyone go to more training. The leaders ultimately rejected that idea, however, since their people had already undergone significant amounts of training that had allowed them to achieve their current level of safety. They decided that additional hours of training wouldn't be sufficiently predictive of achieving their new goal. The leaders at Younger Brothers then looked more carefully at the primary causes of accidents plaguing the company and developed a different idea for their lead measures: compliance to safety standards. They decided to measure compliance via six safety standards: wearing hard hats, gloves, boots, and eyewear, as well as using scaffolds and roof braces to keep workers from sliding off the roof. They were certain that enforcing these six standards at high levels of compliance would be both predictive and influenceable in reducing accidents. Within 1 year of focusing on the lead measure of compliance to safety standards, Younger Brothers Construction achieved the best safety record in the 30-year history of the company. But it wasn't easy. One of the most challenging aspects of their lead measure was simply getting the data. Lag measure data of accidents and injuries came automatically from the company's systems each week. The lead measure, compliance to safety standards, had to be physically observed. This meant that construction foremen had to move among the various crews to check whether the people were wearing their hard hats, gloves, safety glasses, scaffolds, and roof braces were firmly in place. Moreover, they had to do this despite a never-ending stream of distractions: subcontractor issues, late shipments, customer concerns, weather delays. In the middle of that whirlwind, checking for safety compliance might not seem wildly important to a construction foreman. However, because reducing safety incidents was the wildly important goal, and because safety compliance was the primary leverage point for achieving it, they made it happen week after week. The lesson in this story is that lead measure data is almost always more difficult to acquire than lag measure data, but you must pay the price to track your lead measures. We often see teams struggle with this, zeroing in on the high leverage lead measure only to say, wow, getting that data is going to take real work. We're too busy for that. If you're serious about your WIG, then you must create a way to track your lead measures. Without data, you can't drive performance on the lead measures. Without lead measures, you don't have leverage. And when the WIG is truly important, you've got to have that leverage. The WIG for every airline flight is a safe landing. Flying today is actually remarkably safe. But that wasn't always true. In the 1930s, many serious airplane crashes were caused by pilot error. In 1935, Major Pete Hill, a very experienced test pilot with the U.S. Army, crashed one of the biggest airplanes ever built because he forgot to make sure the tail elevators were unlocked before taking off. As a result, pilots got together and adopted a clear set of lead measures called a pre-flight checklist. After that, there were far fewer crashes due to pilot error. Today, the pre-flight checklist is the greatest predictor of arriving safely. On modern commercial aircraft, the checklist is often automated, so the plane cannot take off until the pilot has checked off each item. The pre-flight checklist is a perfect example of what we mean by a high-leverage activity. Going through the checklist takes a few minutes, but can have enormous impact. 100% compliance with the checklist is also an excellent example of a lead measure. It is predictive of safe landings and influenceable by the pilots. Once you and your team begin to develop lead measures in Discipline 2, you'll gain an even greater appreciation for the work you did in narrowing your focus in Discipline 1. Driving the lead measures for a single WIG is a challenging enough objective in the midst of your whirlwind. Leaders who insist on more than two WIGs in Discipline 1, despite our advice, always change their minds once they begin to understand lead measures in Discipline 2. Lead measures and engagement. Once a team is clear about its lead measures, their view of the goal changes. Let's take a look at what happened when Beth Wood, a grocery store manager, set out to achieve a very challenging goal of increasing year-over-year sales. Beth called in Bob, her bakery manager, to get his support for improving their sagging year-over-year sales numbers. Bob is a good-natured manager, and on a typical day, he would likely have said, "Sure, Beth, I'd be glad to help," even if he didn't have a clue what he could do to drive more sales. On this day, however, Bob had reached his limit and wasn't in the mood to just go along. "You want me to improve sales?" he said sarcastically. "Knock yourself out, Beth." Startled by Bob's response, Beth came back quickly. "Look, Bob, I can't do this alone. You're closer to the customers than I am, and you're closer to the employees than I am." Now Bob was really frustrated. "What exactly would you like me to do? It's not like I can hit people over the head and drag them into the store. I run the bakery. If you want a bagel, I'm your guy." Now, if you didn't know Beth and Bob, you might think that Bob has a chronic bad attitude or doesn't respect Beth, or worse, is just lazy. But none of these things are true. Bob actually likes Beth and would also like to help the store improve sales. But two things were holding him back. One, he doesn't know how, and two, he doesn't think he can. This moment, what's really going through Bob's mind is, we're a 32-year-old store that just had a Walmart Supercenter move in down the street. We're also on the wrong side of the intersection. All the traffic has to make a left to get in here, if they can even see our sign. And Beth wants me to improve store sales. Bob continues, "Hey, if I knew how to improve sales, don't you think I'd already be doing it? I'm not holding out on you." When you see Bob's perspective, you can better understand his response to this frustrating situation. Bob is representative of so many people. They can see the rock all too well. The problem is they just don't see the lever. Now, let's replay the same scenario, but this time with Beth using a lead measure to drive her goal. She calls her managers together and poses this question. "Above sustaining our day-to-day operations, what is the one thing your team could do to improve year-over-year sales the most?" In effect, she is asking them, what influenceable outcome or behavior is the most predictive of moving the lag measure of sales? But she's limiting it to a very narrow focus. They begin to discuss a lot of possibilities, such as raising customer service, improving store conditions, or giving away more free samples. After a lot of back and forth, they finally come to the agreement that the single biggest thing they can do to improve sales in their store is to reduce the number of out-of-stock items. This lead measure of reducing out-of-stocks is highly predictive of better store sales. This is well known in the retail world. Equally important, out-of-stocks is a highly influenceable lead measure. Now Bob sees what he can do in the bakery to drive sales. Reducing out-of-stocks is something he and his team can really influence. They can perform extra shelf reviews to check for items that were sold out. They can organize the back room so that fast-moving products are easier to restock. Or they can change the frequency and the volume of reordering. In other words, it's a game he and his team can win. And now he's engaged. When a team defines its lead measures, they're making a strategic bet. In a sense, they're saying, we're betting that by driving these lead measures, we are going to achieve our wildly important goal. They believe that the lever is going to move the rock. And because of that belief, they engage. Discipline 3 and 4 are designed to help the team put energy into moving the lead measure. However, the real impact and beauty of a good lead measure in Discipline 2 is that they truly connect the team to the achievement of the WIG. And ultimately, it's the front line of an organization that creates the bottom line results you're after. Coming up with the right lead measure is really about helping everyone see themselves as strategic business partners and engaging them in dialogue about what can be done better or differently in order to achieve the WIGs. A good example is the advertising department of the Savannah Morning News, a venerable newspaper in the American South. When we met with them, their WIG was to close a serious revenue gap. They had fallen into the trap of trying to focus on everything at once, including pushing new products, daily insert specials, and other add-ons, an attempt to incrementally move the revenue number. Their focus was spread across so many initiatives that they had taken their eye off their main product. So they began with Discipline 1, setting a wildly important goal to increase advertising revenue by focusing on their core product. Everything changed when they started practicing Discipline 2, act on the lead measures. Everybody on the team was involved in the dialogue. After thinking through ways to increase advertising dollars, they agreed together on 3 key actions. To increase their number of contacts with new customers, potential advertisers who had not done business with the newspaper. To reactivate customers who hadn't advertised with the paper for 6 months or more. And to upsell their existing clients, finding ways to add value to the message, maybe adding color to an ad, giving it better placement, or increasing the size of an ad. In practice, the plan broke down into simple lead measures. In the weekly WIG session, people committed to hit a certain number of new customer contacts, reactivation calls, and upsell offers. The next week, they reported on the results. Individual salespeople were not only managing their own business more effectively, but also regularly communicating to each other best practices, refinements to approaches, and ways of overcoming barriers. The advertising director said, I've been in this business for 20 years. I've spent my entire career basically praying over lag measures and putting out fires. For the first time, she felt able to help her people achieve their goal in tangible ways. The newspaper closed their revenue gap and shot past their goal for the year. Acting consistently on the right lead measures made it all possible. Based on her success, Morris Communication, the parent company of the Savannah Morning News, went on to implement 4DX with their 40 other newspapers. We'll talk more about selecting the right lead measures in Section 2. Discipline 3, keep a compelling scoreboard. The third discipline is to make sure everyone knows the score at all times so that they can tell whether or not they are winning. This is the discipline of engagement. Remember, people play differently when they are keeping score. The difference in performance between a team that simply understands their lead and lag measures as a concept and a team that actually knows their score is remarkable. If the lead and lag measures are not captured in a visual scoreboard and updated regularly, they will disappear into the distractions of the whirlwind. Simply put, people disengage when they don't know the score. When they can see at a glance whether or not they are winning, they become profoundly engaged. In Discipline 3, the strategic bet for your team, their lead and lag measure, are translated into a visible, compelling scoreboard. Several years ago, we were working with a group of leaders at Northrop Grumman to apply 4DX to the design and building of Coast Guard cutters. Our project began only a few months after Hurricane Katrina had significantly damaged their facility. And as we were introducing Discipline 3, they offered an example that perfectly illustrated the importance of having a compelling scoreboard. On the previous Friday night, the local high school team had played an important football game. As expected, the stands were full, and there was the usual excitement leading up to the kickoff. But as the game progressed, something was missing. No one was cheering. In fact, no one seemed to be paying attention to the game at all. The only sound from the stands was the dull hum of conversation. What was happening? The scoreboard had blown down during the hurricane and had not yet been repaired. The fans couldn't see any numbers, so no one could tell what the score was, what down it was, or even how much time was left. There was a game going on, but it was like no one even knew. This story really caught our attention. Have you ever wanted to shout in frustration at your team, "Don't you get it? There's a game going on here, and it really matters." If you have, it's likely your team is missing the same critical element that affected the fans at the game, a clear and compelling scoreboard. Great teams know at a moment whether or not they are winning. They must know, otherwise they don't know what they have to do to win the game. A compelling scoreboard tells the team where they are and where they should be. Information essential to team problem solving and decision making. That's why a great team can't function without a scoreboard that compels action. Without it, energy dissipates, intensity lags, and the team goes back to business as usual. We need to be very clear here. Visually displaying data is not new to you or your team. In fact, you may be thinking that you already have a scoreboard, or even lots of scoreboards, all captured in complex spreadsheets inside your computer. And the data just keeps coming in. Most of the data is in the form of lag measures, accompanied by historical trends, forward projections, and detailed financial analysis. The data is important and serves a purpose for you as the leader. Your spreadsheets are what we would call a coach's scoreboard. But what we're after in Discipline 3 is something quite different. In implementing Discipline 3, you and your team need to build a player's scoreboard, one that's designed solely to engage the players on your team to win. To understand the impact of this kind of scoreboard, imagine that you're at a park where a group of teenagers are playing basketball. You're not close enough to hear them, but you can see them. Can you tell, just by watching, if they are keeping score? You can, and the indicators are obvious. First, you'll see a level of intensity in their play that you wouldn't see if they weren't keeping score. You'll also see teamwork, better shot selection, aggressive defense, and celebration each time they make a basket. These are the behaviors of a fully engaged team. And they only play at this level when the game matters. In other words, when it matters enough that they are keeping score. If your scoreboard includes complicated data that only you, the leader, understand, it represents a leader's scoreboard. But for maximum engagement and performance, you need a player's scoreboard that makes it the team's game. Jim Stewart, one of the originators of 4DX, said it best. The fundamental purpose of a player's scoreboard is to motivate the players to win. We began this chapter with the critically important statement, people play differently when they are keeping score. Now we need to shift the emphasis to be even clearer. People play differently when they are keeping score. This creates a very different feeling than when you keep score for them. When team members themselves are keeping score, they truly understand the connection between their performance and reaching their goals. And this changes the level at which they play. When everyone on the team can see the score, the level of play rises, not only because they can see what's working and what adjustments are needed, but also because now they want to win. The player's scoreboard is essential to motivating the players to win. Characteristics of a compelling scoreboard. There are four questions we always ask when determining if a scoreboard is likely to be compelling to the players. First, is it simple? It has to be simple. Think about the scoreboard in a football game. Usually only six distinct pieces of data are displayed. Score, time, quarter, down and distance, timeouts. Now think about how many pieces of data the coaches are tracking on the sidelines. Yards per carry, completion percentage, third down conversions, pass distribution, and even hang time and yards for punts. The list goes on forever. Coaches need this data to manage the game. But the scoreboard on the field shows only the data needed to play the game. Number two, can I see it easily? It has to be visible to the players. The scoreboard at a football game is huge and the numbers gigantic, so everyone can tell at a glance who's winning. If your scoreboard sits on your computer or hangs on the back of your office door, it's out of sight, it's out of mind for the team. Remember that you are always competing with the whirlwind, and it's a tough adversary. Without a visible scoreboard, the WIG and the lead measures could be forgotten in a matter of weeks, if not days, in the constant urgency of your day-to-day responsibilities. Visibility also drives accountability. The results become personally important to the team when the scoreboard's displayed where it can be seen by everyone. We've observed this again and again. We've seen union chefs at a giant juice bottling plant in Michigan choose to skip their lunch break in order to increase the number of full truckloads they delivered so they could move the scoreboard. Why? So they can move past other shifts on the scoreboard. In another instance, we observed the night shift come to work at midnight and saw that the first thing they looked at was the scoreboard to see how their team was doing compared to the day shift. If your team is geographically dispersed, the scoreboard should be visible on your desktop computer or mobile phone. Number three, does it show lead and lag measures? It should show both the lead and the lag measures. This really helps the scoreboard come to life. The lead measure is what the team can affect. The lag measure is the result they want. The team needs to see both or they will quickly lose interest. When they can see both the lead and the lag, they can watch the bet play out. They can see what they are doing, the lead, and what they